Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, December 22nd. I'm Ray Graff. Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques, Jewelry and Coin is in the studio today to answer your questions. We'll talk about some special paintings today and who knows what else. If you have recently discovered a hidden treasure, you need help figuring out what it is, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. It's voxpop@wamc.org, but the number again is 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson and your antique questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing antiques today with Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques, Jewelry and Coin. Mark has been buying, selling, and collecting interesting things since he was 8 years old. After running a traditional antique shop and opening a gallery on Broadway in Saratoga, Mark was approached by Sotheby's in 2000 to assist organizing and curating single-owner sales. Mark is a past member of the American Society of Appraisers and has completed courses in the NYU Appraisal Studies Program in Period American Furniture at the Metropolitan Museum. He's also certified in diamond grading from the Gemological Institute of America, an RPI grad with a degree in materials engineering. Mark travels throughout the region meeting with clients, helping them settle estates and family treasures. If you have a family treasure you want settled, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or of course you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number and the lines are loading up, but there are a few lines open at the moment. It's 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson, happy holidays. Welcome back.
Hey, happy holidays, Ray. Great to be here.
You know, in the bio, and we read it every time you're on the show, and you're on it 3 or 4 or 5 times a year, it says you've been buying and selling stuff since you were 8. Do you recall what you were buying and selling when you were 8?
Let's see. I had an aunt who was a semi-professional golfer, and I used to stay with her in Westfield, Massachusetts when I'd go, and most of the relatives on one side of my family were there. And I would like caddy kind of for her. I'd go out on the golf course with her. And so while she was golfing, I would walk along the sides of the hole, and I found golf balls, and I thought that was interesting, so I started looking for them. So I would collect the golf balls up, and then when we got back to the clubhouse, I'd sell them.
Really? And what would you get for an old used golf ball by a semi-pro golfer?
I mean, like the other people's lost balls out in the grass.
Oh,
and stuff.
I see.
I don't know. Get a buck or two for a handful of them. I don't know. They were probably what? I think back in those days, they might have been 50 cents or a dollar for 3 of them. So maybe I'd get, you know, a buck for a handful. I don't know. It was just, but that's an example of my early buying and selling and really finding and scavenging and selling is more like it.
You know, it just occurs to me, if you had a vetted and certified old golf ball from, say, Sam Snead or Jack Nicklaus, would it be worth anything?
Oh, very collectible, very collectible. Even more rare, and it kills me because I grew up in a Victorian house in Saratoga Springs with a big carriage house full of stuff. And one of the things in there that we used to bang around when we were a kid was an old sewn leather golf ball.
Ah.
And I don't know what happened to it. We probably beat it to death and left it out in the snow and rain, and it was lost. But those early hand-sewn leather golf balls are, you know, $2,000 to $4,000 on up.
Oh, my God. So does that haunt your dreams? You say, what was I thinking when I did that?
Hey, in this business, you start off, you learn by making mistakes, and the more expensive mistake you make, the longer you remember it. If I worried about all the things I missed or the stuff I lost or the valuable things I sold for too little, I'd never get any sleep. But
you make a point. Well, you try melatonin, you probably get over that.
Yeah, there you go.
Mark Lawson of Mark Lawson Antiques is with us today, and you sent us some photos some very interesting pictures, sort of a portfolio of Eastern European art. And I wonder if you could tell me why you sent this and what it's all about.
Yeah, great question, Ray. No, the so one of the I love to research and look things up, and I love learning about the history and story behind, you know, old things and collections. And so one of the most rewarding aspects of my job is when I, you know, get to help families with collections of things that they have to figure out, you know, how to, you know, that they have to value and then figure out how to get sold or find the best possible home for them. So I was approached by a family, and the dad was Czechoslovakian, came over, you know, sometime, you know, in the, I think, 50s or 60s. And his whole life he collected Czechoslovakian and Slovak art, artwork, prints and paintings of all types. So he died 5 or 10 years ago, and he had this giant collection of the, I think we're up over, you know, we're cataloging the collection now, we're up over at least 600 works.
Wow.
And, you know, they all sat down in the basement till, you know, for 5 or 10 years till the family was, you know, comfortable with doing something with them, because, you know, it was like dad's pride and joy kind of thing. And, you know, and culturally, of cultural importance to him and to the family. So they don't treat these things lightly. So they finally decided, okay, it's time to do something. And it's just, it's so much fun. A, it's an area that I have superficial knowledge about as best, you know, the, you know, Slovakian art. But and generally it's more like Eastern European art. But it's so interesting to, and it's so much fun for me to, you know, go through these things, figure out the signatures, figure out who these artists were, learn a little bit about them, and enjoy and be exposed to these different styles and works of art that I've never seen before. Very, very interesting. And, you know, like the Chinese collection we talked about on the show a little while ago, that was another basement, you know, full of Chinese antiques that was well received in the marketplace.
Yeah.
This is another, you know, a great collection. You don't know what's going to come out of the blue. I mean, I've never anticipated a collection of Slovakian artwork, and here it is.
You know, it occurs to me that it may be more art than science to assign value to these. I'm looking at this one, Bohuslav Reinjak crucifixion, which is a stunning piece of work, and I don't know when this was done, but it's a beautiful piece of art. There are plenty of beautiful pieces of art that aren't worth anything. How do you set a value on something like this?
Well, there's the traditional methodology. So this guy's an important Czechoslovakian artist. He and I'm learning the words for all this as I go, because apparently Czechoslovakia was made up of Slovaks and Magyars. Magyars are Hungarian, Slovaks kind of split off into, now there's Slovakia over there. So I'm learning the nomenclature, I guess. There's the word. It takes a little bit of time. The it's a beautiful work, just as you said. You saw it, and it's impressive on its face. But the first thing you do is you find other examples by that, as any appraiser does. You look for comparables, similar works that have sold in the recent past, and you can, you know, by comparing them, you can, you know, project some sort of an idea of what it might be worth today, you know, all other things being equal. And you know, so that's when it's easy. When it's not so easy is when you have important artists, but very few of their works have come on the marketplace. So you don't know if they're worth $10,000 or $100.
Yeah.
And in a way, you don't really know until they get into the marketplace. And then there's a whole art of how you present it can affect what people are going to anticipate they might have to pay for something if they want it.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the things are worth what somebody's willing to pay for it. And, you know, auction, we've talked about the compelling venue for selling things that auctions are, with human psychology being what it is and our competitive nature. But, yeah, it's tricky. And then you have, you know, people, I've seen, I can't tell you how many times I've come across amazing, amazing works of art that knock your socks off. Nobody knows who, you know, who the person is. You know, maybe they were wonderfully talented and died when they were 20. Maybe, you know, it was back in the day when things were less the culturally alive the way they are today. And, you know, once a woman got married, that was it for her art career, or, you know, it wasn't beyond a certain point, it was only socially acceptable for a woman to do certain things. So, you know, there's you come across amazing works of art, and there's no information and no record, and they sell as a nice decorative thing. But, you know, if there were 100 of them that might have sold for several thousand dollars each, they'd be worth a heck of a lot more. So it's a funny thing, valuing, assigning value, finding, you know, figuring out what things are worth. But at the end of the day, something's only worth what somebody is willing to pay for it.
Mark Lawson is our guest today. It's Antiques. Tell you what, Mark, we'll take a quick break. The lines are completely loaded. We'll hit the phones in a moment. 800-348-2551. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Antiques Today with Mark Lawson, and let's see, we'll hit the phones. John in Whiting Hill, Vermont, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hey.
Yeah, Mark, I've got this interesting piece. It was actually my grandfather's. He picked it up probably in the 70s. You know, we have a Freemason connection in our family. It's a George Washington print. And it's dated frame January 12th, 1859. It's got a glass back. And basically the content is it's George Washington paying a visit to Martha Custis, who became Martha Washington. And, you know, her children are in the parlor area of the print. And, you know, it's something I've always thought was of value to an Americana collector. Just curious what you think this might be worth. It's a beautiful frame with staggered wood, kind of, you know, like a post and beam type of wood frame with like a little gilded area in the inset.
Yeah, it sounds very nice. Anything related to United States presidents is collectible. George Washington, obviously, the first president, and more so in that he was memorabilia related to him has always been collected, whether it was, you know, early memorial buttons or objects made around the time when he died, you know, around circa 1800, or, you know, for the next 200 years, really, or next, at least for the collectibles marketplace, 120 years. There was a lot of stuff made around the bicentennial of his birth, which would have been, I think, 1932. So this, it sounds like a nice engraving. What's the size?
Yeah, I would call it 8.5 by 11, for lack of better. I only do have a tape measure on me here. One second, I will give you a quick. The print area is actually 10 wide by 7.5 deep.
Yeah, sure. So relatively small size. I'm not familiar with the specific one that you're discussing. prints of that size were often published in books, so it may have come out of a book at some point or another, and prints of that size are going to be a little bit more common with, dating from 1859, it's probably a small steel engraving from that time. It's the sort of thing that, at auction, I would anticipate at auction maybe in the 30 to 50 or 40 to 60 range. Another factor that could add to its value would be, how nice the framing is and whether that framing is original to, the time when the print was made. So with a really wonderful frame, period frame from 1859 that it was originally done in, that could, push the value up to the, $50 to $100 range, maybe a little bit more. And, so that's going to be another factor. But prints of that size with, American subjects were very popular, and thus they're relatively common.
John, thank you very much for the call. It's Antiques Today with Mark Lawson. The number is 800-348-2551. Sort of tying in with that one. We had this email from Judy a while back, and you can't see the picture, but I'll tell you what
it is. No, I think the flag?
From Judy, yeah. I have a 39-star silk flag. What could be the value of this?
Let's see. Well, since 9/11, the marketplace for flags has, and anything patriotic related has gone way up. There's a lot more interest in collecting patriotic themed items. So you say 39?
That's what it says in the email anyway. You're counting the stars. Jerry Lewis telethon.
40. Yeah, well, it's interesting because let's see. The 39 star flag. Okay, so that's going to be 1876.
Okay.
1876. So the next question, and I think they said in the email it said that it's silk.
Yep, 14 by 24 and a half.
Yeah, that's a nice flag. If it's period, period meaning that if this flag was manufactured, around 1876 or a little bit thereafter. It's going to be, the market for these is really good. It could, I think it's going to be at least in the $300 to $500 range.
Wow.
And could be a bit more. Again, the older flags with the different variants are much less common. They were often thrown away when a new version, when the next star or a couple of stars were added. Mm-hmm. And the marketplace right now for flags in particular, but anything patriotic themed is very, very good.
Okay, so basically advice would be don't hang this one outside on 4th of July.
Well, it's remarkable. If it's that old and it's silk, it's remarkable that it has not deteriorated more. Silk, it's an organic material.
Yeah.
And with, not too many decades of exposure to sunlight and, moisture and all everything that comes, just the weather, it's going to get brittle and, ultimately just fall apart. So with this one, you want to keep it out of the light, keep it away from heat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that there's a way to, if it was a family thing, they wanted to preserve it, I'm sure that there's a way to get it framed in with a method that will keep it from deteriorating.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Mark Lawson is our guest today. It's Antiques at 800-348-2551. Mickey in Albany. Mickey, you're on.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Not quite an antique yet, but I have a ring that was made for me by Margaret Moore, who was a Greenwich Village goldsmith. She also had a wood shop in Woodstock. And I wondered if I know that there's a value to this Greenwich Village score. Is it the Woodstock School of Jewelry Making? What can you tell me about this?
So I'm not familiar with Margaret. Can you tell me a little bit about its style?
It's a very organic style. I had gone into the shop in the village. I was in my jade period then, and I told Margaret that I love jade, and she said, oh, yes, I have some really lovely jade that I didn't know what to do with. How about this? And she kind of designed a ring for me and then made it, and I bought it, and I've had it for more than 50 years, and it's a beautiful contemporary jade.
Made out of gold or silver?
14 karat gold.
14 karat gold. So, it sounds like a very nice ring, and that certainly should have some value beyond simply the gold value. Unfortunately, in the marketplace, in the secondary marketplace, if there's not if a piece of jewelry that's made out of gold is not particularly fashionable or stylish, the value defaults to the breakdown value of the materials in it, which would be the gold value. Something like this, I'd have to research a little bit. If it's she's a designer that's collected, there may be a good premium for the ring above its breakdown value. It sounds certainly like something that you like very much anyway. It has to be. It's going to be worth, at least between $500 and $1,000. Huh. I'm sure, just as a nice vintage ring, as long as it's in reasonably good shape, and it may have some collectible value beyond that if she's a noted and sought after designer of jewelry.
I have a feeling that she is and that she was.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no. I've tried researching it online, but haven't come up with anything.
If you want to drop us an email, I'd be happy to see if I could get some more information for you.
That's a great point.
Great.
What is your email address, Mark?
Thank you.
It's marklawsonantiques@gmail.com, and all the info is on our website at marklawson.com.
All right, very good. Mickey, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. Always great to have Mark Lawson here. Mark, yes.
Ray, let me jump in for a quick second.
Sure.
I just did hot off the wire. It turns out that the 39-star flag is a rare variant that was only in use for a little while in South Dakota.
Ah, interesting.
When South Dakota got added.
You know, it's so funny. I was about to just tell you that a buddy of mine down in North Jersey who was listening, he's a multi-billionaire, drives fast cars, knows all kinds of stuff, said that 39-star was never legal, but produced based on the assumption of states being added, and it's pretty rare.
Yeah, at least $1,000 to $1,500 if it's from the period, maybe more.
Fall of 1889, he says they were made. So there you go. That's interesting. The number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Gary in Cornwall on Hudson. Gary, you're up.
Hi. Have you ever heard of a watercolorist mid-century named S.R. Bunai, B-U-N-N-I-G-H? My note tells you I found a gouache watercolor of mm-hmm. a Dutch colonial homestead that looks like it's in the rolling hills of the Mid-Hudson Valley, but I can't come up with that name anywhere. There was an ancient guy in the Vermeer era named Johan Bunai, but this looks like it's done in maybe the 30s or 40s. Can you tell me anything?
Yeah, there's a mildly listed artist named Holly Bunai, but she was active in the 70s and 80s. So,
I read that one, but that's not this.
That's
not this person. It looks like S.R. Bunai. So are there any other descendants, perhaps, of the old master? It's a Dutch colonial farmhouse. It's got hay ricks in the background, and it looks like the rolling hills. Gambrel roofed 8x11, and it's on some kind of paper.
Yeah, it sounds like a nice picture, and certainly going to have some decorative value. But without doing a little bit more research. It's I'm not familiar with the artist and don't have. If you haven't been able to find anything, if nothing comes up,
he's not registered or she's not registered. You have to be a registered artist. In other words, in some kind of a compendium of artists.
Yes. That's true, but usually those are composed from, very often those are composed from sales records. So you have to be an artist that had some, commercial success, an artist who has some historic or academic importance, or whose work shows up in the marketplace on a regular basis so that,
the person that did the murals in these banks that shows, like, American industry? That's almost the kind
of local guy.
What do you call those people there? Like the Depression era?
Sure, like the WPA artists? WP artists were, goodness, I can't believe I can't remember that one.
I know what you mean, WPA, the Works Progress Administration.
Right.
Yes.
Those people, they were not going to be listed because they were on the government payroll?
The WP artists generally do come up.
Oh, okay, so this wouldn't be a WPA artist or a Depression era government.
Well, again, even with the WPA, it's only the ones that wound up being significant for one reason or another, either academically or because their artwork sold, or later they became a commercial success, like Thomas Hart Benton, or, so there are still going to be WPA artists that may not show up anywhere other than in if you dig into the documentation of the WPA.
Gary, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Antiques Today with the amazingly popular Mark Lawson. Mark, the lines are going crazy here.
Cool.
I don't know what's going on. Now let's go to Susan in Leverett, Massachusetts. Susan.
Hi there.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes. You're a little shrill because of the speakerphone, but we'll make it work.
Okay. My question is, I have a couple of items that I would like to sell, old family antiques, a gold watch for one and an old clock. How do you go about choosing someone to appraise and or buy these things without getting ripped off or getting a true value?
Yes.
That's a great question. I love the way there's online reviews now for everything. It's a great way to get to make a first pass, get a sense of whether a firm is or an individual is somebody that you want to do business with. And then I take it to what I usually suggest to people, give them a call, see how they are on the phone, see if they're professional, each step of the way, so you identify somebody, you go look at their website, maybe you shoot them an email, ask them a question, see how they respond, maybe give them a call, see what they're like on the phone, see how they respond to you. And I think pretty quickly you can get a good idea whether someone is somebody that you want to do business with. That's the. But I think it's wonderful today that we have all these online reviews, because you can really. Most of the time those are pretty good. I mean, they will tend to skew sometimes towards negative, in that people are more likely to leave a review if they have a really bad experience, or they perceive it to have been a really bad experience. Then you can look at how the different companies are responding to the bad reviews. But it's all that level of transparency, which is, really has transformed our world in so many different ways. In this case, I think it's really helpful to finding somebody that's reliable to deal with.
Susan, thanks a lot for the call. We'll take a quick break here. Mark Lawson is here to discuss antiques. We have another watch question that came in via email while you were answering that one. We will get to it on the other side of the break. 800-348-2551. Vox Pop on WAMC. Mark Lawson joins us to talk about antiques today. The number is 800-348-2551. This one came in via email from Catherine. Catherine says, I have a gold ladies Rolex watch I received as a 21st birthday present in 1966. It has a small round face with a gold sunburst on either side and came with interchangeable leather straps. I wonder if it has any value other than sentimental. And that's from Catherine.
So Rolex is one of the most recognized name in fine wristwatches, ladies and men's, that there is. So it's certainly going to have some value. The smaller, it really depends on the style. You know, if it's one of the date just Rolexes, those are the most popular. But the sunburst on either side makes me think that it might be a more like a small ladies' watch of the period. It's certainly going to have some value because it's a Rolex.
Yeah.
It's got to be worth at least somewhere between $500 and $1,500.
Okay.
If it's special in some way because of the model or the case, it could be worth more than that. It's unlikely that it's worth less than that.
And if Catherine is really famous, then it's worth a lot more, too. So, Catherine, if you're
yeah.
By the way, this email came in from Jeff, and I know that we forwarded it to you. It's a picture of a federal period dresser. I don't know how much we want to go into this since people can't see the picture, but
sure.
Go ahead.
I can talk about it readily and easily if you'd like.
Certainly.
So, this is one of the most. This is a kind of dresser that I see the most often. In the trade, it's called an empire dresser, which kind of loosely refers to the first, second, and third empires in France, you know, from the Napoleon through, you know, I guess Napoleon III. But really, this is an American dresser that was made in a factory somewhere between probably 1850 and 1870. It has some, you know, curves to it, which are kind of a stylistic nod toward the neoclassical furniture of the early 19th century in Europe and the United States, but it's mostly flat. It has mostly flat parts. It's veneered, usually, you know, a mahogany veneer over some sort of softwood like pine or poplar underneath. And these are, I've seen them in infinite variations throughout my career as an antique dealer. Today, this is the kind of thing that at auction might sell for anywhere from, you know, $100 to $250, okay, something like that, as long as it's in good condition, which this one appears to be. These are prone to, all of the mahogany that you see is actually a mahogany veneer,
yep,
and very often that veneer gets damaged and chipped. And once it gets, you know, significantly damaged and chipped, they lose most of their value. But back when country furniture was popular in the, you know, 60s and 70s, antique dealers would throw these into the lake till all the veneer got waterlogged and detached from the pine. They pull it back out and refinish it, and then you had a nice country dresser.
Okay, really? They would throw them into the lake?
Yeah.
Couldn't they just peel the veneer off? I mean, what's going on here?
Right. Well, you have to soak the glue was water soluble, so you'd throw it in the water. It was easy, and after not too long, you know, after a couple of days, all the veneer would come off, and it was a lot easier than a traditional refinish.
So it's in some rural parts of the state, there are antique dealers just hurling dressers into lakes.
Yeah.
You guys do a lot of ether, eh? All right, Linda in Williamstown. Linda, you're on.
Hi, Mark. Thank you. I have a house full of Nathan Margolis and Harold Margolis furniture. And I'm wondering what is the best way to eventually sell it, and is it of any value today?
I had a once my wife and I moved into our house where we still live, our first dining room set was a Margolis table and chairs, sideboard, and break front that was wonderful. So they made exquisite quality kind of period reproduction furniture made in the early 20th century of, you know, fine copies of the highest forms of 18th and early 19th century furniture. Great quality, and it used to be worth a fortune. Unfortunately, as styles have changed, lifestyles and fashion has changed, the interest in this type of furniture has dropped significantly, and along with it, I'm very sorry to say, the value. But there's no better quality. I mean, it's exceptional stuff. The how to go about selling it is a good question. I think there are still people there's certainly people that still appreciate quality. It might be something that you would want to start off with selling on a consignment basis within an area where in part of the country where there might be more interest. Yeah, I'm really not sure. I'd love to, you know, I'd like to find what I'm describing to you, actually. But I know that I can always get somebody to appreciate something of the kind of quality that Margolis Furniture is. It's just finding your way to those people in that area. You know, I think a good quality auctioneer could help you. A higher-end consignment company. But I would look around, there's a area of, in Litchfield County, there's a place called Litchfield County Auctions. They're a big place. They're near Greenwich, Connecticut. They serve a, you know, more affluent clientele. And they also do like consignments and estate sales, but they're reliable. They've been, you know, I've known of them for at least 20 years, and when I've had dealings with them, they've been very pleasant to deal with. So that might be a place, one that you might have some luck with. And well, first off, they're going to know what you're talking about. Not all places will. And two, they're reliable and professional, and they're in an affluent upscale area, which is kind of what you want for this kind of furniture.
Linda, thanks a lot for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC Antiques Today with Mark Lawson. The number is 800-348-2551. Kathleen in East Hampton. Kathleen, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm calling because my great-grandfather is from Ireland, or stayed in Ireland. And, you know, I've learned through the family histories that he was blind for the last 11 years of his life. And then I was at a talk. A man was giving a talk about a book he had written about his experience in Ireland, so it was a nonfiction. And he mentioned coinage. He said that, and I don't know what era this was, but he said there were coins, Irish coins, that had, you know, chickens or horses or animals on them. So my question to you is, have you ever seen such a thing?
Some of the modern Irish coinage actually has animals on it, which may be an artifact of historical Irish coins, but I'm really not sure. I'm just looking at some, you know, there's a reindeer, a grouse, a horse, a pig. So that's the the modern Irish coinage. I wonder if there's ancient ones. I suppose there could be. Well, did some of the ancient? My educated guess would be that historically, ancient coinage in maybe Celtic coinage or coinage that was minted during the Romans during the period of Roman occupation of Ireland may have had animals on it, may have been noteworthy or different for that, and the Irish carried on that tradition. But knowing the Irish, I would say the more likely answer is that it's a Celtic artifact, because I doubt they would celebrate anything the Romans did when they were occupying Ireland.
Well, we have to move it along here, but where could Kathleen go to take that next step in her research?
Thank you.
Google's your friend, I think. A local expert in numismatics is a guy, William Panitch, at William Panitch Rare Coins. He's a great guy and might be able to answer that. He doesn't really do ancients. There's not too many ancient coin experts about. But I would start with Bill.
All right, Kathleen, thanks a lot and good luck. We appreciate the call. And over to Mary in Grahamsville. Mary, you're up. Hello. Okay, we knocked everything over. Welcome.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. All right.
My grandmother had a wide wedding ring from Tiffany. It was 14 karat gold with platinum overlay with apple blossoms on it. Now, when my mother got married, she cut it in half, half for her and half for her sister. And the apple blossoms have worn off, but the platinum is still there. Could you tell me what the value of that is today?
Well, I think there's for your family, there's certainly more of a value in the beautiful story, because in the marketplace, as you're describing it, the value is simply going to be the value of the gold and the platinum in it. It's not going to have the fact that it came from Tiffany's or that or any of its subsequent history with your family, unfortunately, will not add anything to its value. It's once a piece has been A, altered significantly, and then B, worn significantly, most of the value above just its base value for gold and platinum will be gone.
Well, I called Tiffany and asked if they could put the apple blossoms, engrave them in, and they said yes. They told me that they would keep the platinum, whatever was left.
Wow, how about that?
So I said, well, I don't think so.
I agree.
Thank you anyway.
Thanks, Mary. We appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Let's go over to Ron in Amsterdam. Hello, Ron.
How you doing?
Good.
Good. How are you?
I don't know if you'll be able Good. I don't know if you'd be able to answer this question or if you want to or whatever. Now, I sold some things on Christie's, and I know they have a bigger platform, and you buy certain objects. Do you rate yourself as getting the same value as being at Christie's, or because they have such a bigger platform? The reason I asked, let me tell you why I asked.
Okay, this is a tough question.
The reason I asked is because when you sell something on Christie's, it takes like 2 to 3 months to receive your settlement there.
Right.
I'm sure you know about that. But, whether it's worth it to wait because the gain is bigger than
right.
go with somebody like you? What would you
say? So what I always try and help my clients figure out the best way to sell whatever they have. Sometimes it's a piece, you know, there's different high-end auctions, different locations, and depending on what something is, it may sell better at one place versus another. I think any place today, so, you know, that's a good question for whoever you choose to talk about that sort of thing, when you want to talk about specifics. And no matter where you go today, most places now are doing live auctions with internet-only bidding. So what that means most of the time is you get good prices because your reach is as far as the internet reaches, which is worldwide, but it takes time to fulfill the sale. So an item will sell at the sale, but then you have to wait for the people to pay, which can take a real long time. Mm-hmm. Then you have to wait for shipping to be arranged, which takes some time. Then you have to wait for the thing to get to wherever it's supposed to go, because most auctioneers are not going to release payment until the purchaser has received it and everything's okay, so they don't get stuck holding the bag, as it were, because most big, reliable auctioneers will give some sort of guarantee that something's not an outright forgery, and sometimes those can sneak by if they're really well done. So I guess it depends. It depends on what you have, and
example.
I think a small local auctioneer, depending on what it is, can sometimes get more than a big auction house. Some of the big auction houses, keep in mind, won't take things that have a sale have a price point of less than $10,000 nowadays. So what do you do with everything they won't take? Then for those you have to find a place to go with. So it's a complicated question.
All right. Well, I'm afraid that is the last question you'll be able to answer today, Mark Lawson. We are out of time. Now listen, I got to be honest with you, man. We have a full bank of calls. We have about 10 emails we haven't gotten to. If somebody wanted to drop you a casual note, no pressure, no, we make Mark Lawson do extra work, could somebody drop you an email real quick?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What's
I'm happy to
address?
Help anybody, anytime. And anybody that's left hanging, I'll certainly get to them immediately if they want to shoot their inquiry over to us at the marklawsonantiques@gmail.com. And all the info is on the website at marklawson.com.
Beautiful job, sir. Have a very happy holiday season. We'll talk to you in 2021, okay?
Yeah, it was so nice to spend the hour with you again, Ray. Great holiday.
All right, buddy. Support comes from Veterinary Hospital of Laurel Inn Brown, Turner's Falls, Massachusetts, providing comprehensive care for dogs and cats for over 25 years. New clients welcome, drlaurelinnbrown.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, supporting our community with a temporary closure and continuing to explore art and ideas online. For projects and resources, skidmore.edu/tang. And the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie presenting Judge Magazine, late 19th century politics, presidents, and political cartoons through December 30th, arkellmuseum.org. Once again, thanks to Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques, Jewelry, and Coin for joining us today. Thank you for listening. I apologize to the multitudes who couldn't get through today. He'll be back. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Our producer, Jackie Orchard, phones answered by Wes Burton. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the program, get at your hammer and your T-square. It's Home Improvement with Darren Tracy. Right now, stand by for the book show.